Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're listening to the Traveling Culturati, exploring the style and culture of travel with travel pro Javon Harley, exclusively on HUR Voices.
Hey there, I'm back. Believe it or not, I took a spring break, and it's so nice to be back, and with a brand new show. Make sure you visit the website, travelingculturati.com, and connect with me on social media. Healthcare professional, registered nurse, and fellow travel culturati, Yolanda Como, is guest hosting with me today, and we're walking it out. Talking about walking tours, that is, where to take some of the best, and what you should know about planning one for yourself. Also, I've got Javon's Travel Minute, the question of the week, and the culture report. But right now, I've got some travel news. And in the news certainly is Cuba. There is a ton of news for Cuba. President Obama's recent visit to Cuba and meeting with Cuba's President Raul Castro. President Obama made additional changes to the restrictions on travel for U.S. citizens. The most recent change allows for individuals to travel to Cuba, where before you were required to travel with a group. The travel restrictions for the purpose of travel remain the same and must fall into one of 12 categories. The other change was the list of limits of spending U.S. currency during your visit. Before, you were limited to $400 per person. President Obama's visit to Cuba was the first by a sitting American president in over 88 years. There have been many discussions about normalizing Cuba since December of 2014, but now the actions of President Obama and President Raul Castro have allowed significant regulatory changes in the Treasury and Department of Commerce. More good news for Cuba? The home sharing company Airbnb now has permission to expand its Cuba listings to all international markets. Now, home rentals in Cuba are available to U.S. travelers. The Treasury Department has approved rentals starting April 2nd. Cuba has over 4,000 short-term rentals on the island in the past year. And Carnival Corporation and Fathom have worked with Cuba to begin sailing on May 1st, 2016. Fathom's ports will include Havana, Santiago de Cuba, and Cienfuegos, with seven-day cruises round-trip from Miami, Florida. Cultural experiences will consist of interactions with healthcare workers, musicians, entrepreneurs, and local artists. There'll be activities including language lessons, shopping, regional dining, and sightseeing, exploring mural art, and display photography. Carnival Corporation has become the first cruise company in over 50 years to be granted approval to travel between Cuba and the U.S. Although the cruise line has been previously sailing to the Dominican Republic, the line is now available to travel to both the Dominican Republic and Cuba. The cruises will start at $1,800 a person to Cuba and $974 per person for cruises to the Dominican Republic. On the hotel front, Starwood Hotels and Resorts became the first U.S. hotel company to sign a deal with Cuba since 1959. Starwood will manage and market two properties in Havana, and they signed a letter of intent to operate a third pending the ongoing deal they have with Marriott. President Obama and his resolution to make changes in Cuba has relaxed restrictions and paved the way for this deal to happen. This would make Starwood the first U.S. company to commit major money to Cuba since Fidel Castro in 1959. Cuba is expecting an increase in American visitors as President Obama continues to relax restrictions on travel to Cuba for U.S. citizens. Starwood will operate the military-owned Gaviota Fifth Avenue Hotel under its Four Points Sheraton brand and the state-owned Grand Caribbean Inglaterra Hotel under its Luxury Collection brand. And even more big news is on the horizon for Cuba. The U.S. Treasury Office of Foreign Assets Control has approved a deal for Marriott International to create a hospitality relationship with potential partners. Earlier this month, Marriott and Starwood Hotels applied to the U.S. and Cuban governments for permission to invest in hotel development in Cuba. However, considering that the deal between Starwood and Marriott is at a standstill due to a new proposal to Starwood being offered by another investor, it's unclear whether or not Marriott will go ahead with the deal in Cuba. Meanwhile, should Marriott proceed to set up shop in Cuba, this will create a lot of jobs and generate economic opportunities for businesses and the hospitality industry. Hotel availability in Cuba is limited, with not much to choose from as far as luxury properties go. Hopefully, this will change shortly. And I'll keep you posted on the mini Cuba updates. Speaking of that Marriott Starwood deal, you know that Starwood Hotels was supposed to team up with the Marriott to create bigger and more luxurious hotels? Well, that was until a Chinese insurance group put a much larger offer on the table. Well, Marriott just recently put in a counter offer, but it may not be on the table for long. Marriott really wants to partner up with Starwood, judging by their willingness to up the ante with the new bid. Right now, no definitive answer on this bidding war, but we're still waiting to see how this goes. China is dead set on buying U.S. assets in hopes of diversifying. Therefore, it's possible that they may try to beat Marriott's offer yet again. However, if Starwood goes with Anbang, they will owe the Marriott millions of dollars for backing out of their original deal. I will definitely keep you informed on how this deal plays out. Will it be the Marriott or Anbang who walks away as a partner to Starwood Hotels and Resorts? Well, there's a record number of travelers taking to the skies. Airlines for America predicts that the spring of 2016 will be busier than ever, 3% more traveling than last year. They are expecting a record 2.3 million passenger increase on U.S.-based airlines. They're attributing these numbers based off of the affordability and accessibility of today's air travel. The Department of Transportation states that the U.S. aviation industry is at its safest period yet, causing air travel to grow. Last year's air travel increased by 6% from 2014, with U.S. carriers accounting for 50% of that. More passengers means more money, and that means more investing into the customer experience. The final increase allows benefits to customers like lower airfares, more seats, and larger aircraft with reliable operations. Airlines for America is launching a new social media campaign urging customers and travelers to post their spring travel photos with hashtag #WhyWeFly. You can do this on Instagram or Twitter. The winning submissions will be published in an Airlines for America gallery. They also encourage flyers to email them about their travel experiences. Now, how about this? You've heard it from me and you've heard it from many other travel professionals. We highly recommend travelers insurance. Well, there's one company, Cheapo Air, that was ousted by NBC Chicago News. Mr. Brown, a customer from Wheeling, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago, hadn't taken a vacation in over 8 years. Though he certainly had the money, he just needed a reason to travel. The reason came when his daughter asked him to attend her wedding in the Philippines. Mr. Brown booked a flight upon receiving the invitation and paid a total of $6,200. Shortly after Mr. Brown booked his flight, he started having back problems from a prior surgery. After seeing his doctor, he was advised against traveling. When he called Cheapo Air to cancel, he was directed to their travelers insurance company, Seven Corners. They told him they no longer work with Cheapo Air and did not have insurance with them. He was then directed to TripMate, Cheapo Air's current travelers insurance company, who advised him that while he did have insurance, his reason for cancellation was not a covered reason because it was pre-existing. So Brown went to NBC, who contacted Cheapo Air regarding his case. That's when Cheapo Air and TripMate reconsidered and finally refunded him, chalking the mistake up to human error. While pre-existing illnesses are typically not a covered reason, in Mr. Brown's case, he had healed from his back surgery, and therefore the new problem did not fall under pre-existing. That's something you need to know the next time you get traveler's insurance and may need to use it. United Airlines is on the path to produce cleaner air by using renewable fuel. United will first start using this fuel on flights from Los Angeles and San Francisco, and later expanding to other flights. Alt Air Fuels is the name of the refinery that will supply the fuel to United's commercial flights. Alt Air Fuels teams up with the technology-based company Honeywell UOP. Honeywell is a big supplier licensed in the petroleum industry. Together, Alt Air Fuels and Honeywell will assist United with providing cleaner air flights by using both biofuel and traditional fuel. This is supposed to minimize greenhouse gases by 60% over regular fuel. The companies have been working on this project since 2007. The Environmental Protection Agency has required refineries to mix renewable fuel with corn-based ethanol, and United is the first one to comply. Other airlines and companies like Southwest, Federal Express, and Marine Transportation are rumored to have contracted to buy renewable jet fuel in the near future. Sandals has the most beautiful sight for sore eyes. Starting in November 2016, travelers will be able to stay on the water, or over the water. You heard right. Montego Bay Resort will offer floating water cabins on the prettiest blue water you've ever seen, with glass floors for you to take in the view. They're offering you the beauty of the Caribbean up close, literally. The cabins have private infinity pools with outdoor showers and personal butlers. Sandals Royal Caribbean in Jamaica is offering a great deal on their stays if the budget of Bora Bora is out of your price range. And if you're a pet owner or pet lover, your furry friend can now travel with you on Amtrak trains. That's right. Thanks to a new pet policy from Amtrak, your pet can travel with you on select Northeast trains for a small fee of only $25. There are a few stipulations, however. Your pet must be under 20 pounds. They must be in an enclosed carrier. And passengers must sign a pet waiver. Pets can travel for a maximum of 7 hours. You can bring one cat or one dog, but no more than 5 animals are allowed on one train. No more leaving Rufus or Fifi at home or with a sitter. The State Department issued an unusually broad travel alert to Europe. It alerts U.S. citizens to potential risks of travel to and throughout Europe following several terrorist attacks, including the March 22nd attacks in Brussels. The alert states terrorist groups continue to plan near-term attacks throughout Europe, targeting sporting events, tourist sites, restaurants, and transportation. The travel alert expires on June 20, 2016. For the U.S. government to issue such a broad alert is unusual. However, it's not the only country that has done so. Advisories were also issued by Australia, raising its alert for Belgium from a high degree of caution to reconsider your need to travel. Belgium is now at a level 4 terror alert, the highest possible level, and its airport remained closed for several days after the attacks. The U.S. alert advises U.S. citizens to exercise vigilance when in public places or using mass transportation. Be aware of immediate surroundings and avoid crowded places. Exercise particular caution during religious holidays and at large festivals or events. Now, I'm sure you've heard of the movie Dancing with Wolves, but now you can play with wolves. Let me explain. A luxurious new resort in Norway is home to about 7 of the last remaining gray wolves, and the resort's animal manager wants to give their customers a new opportunity to see just how friendly their wolves actually are. The animal manager, Stig Sletten, says there's nothing to fear because their wolves are friendly towards humans. For this getaway in Norway, you can get up close and personal with a wolf and live to tell the story. I'd actually like to do that. Well, that's all I have for travel news. Stay tuned for Javon's Travel Minute, walking tours, and the question of the week. I'm Javon Harley, and this is the Traveling Culturati, exclusively on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. Javon Harley here, your travel pro and host of Traveling Culturati, with the top reasons to visit Ghana: history, friendly people, Ghanaian hospitality, and unsurpassed natural beauty. Ghana has it all, but the top reason to visit Ghana is to join me and Advantage International. The wait is over. The dates are set. Join us in Ghana September 8th through the 16th. We'll start in the capital city of Accra and visit the
W.E.B. Du Bois Center for Pan-African Culture. We'll follow the history of the slave trade and visit the infamous forts, castles, and slave dungeons on the Elmina and Cape Coast, September 8th through the 16th. Fly South African Airways, Africa's most awarded airline, nonstop from Washington, D.C., and stay in deluxe accommodations. Go to advantage-intl.com for complete details. That's advantage-intl.com. See you on the plane.
Welcome back to Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Traveling Culturati, the style and culture of travel, exclusively on HUR Voices.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
Taking the right steps for safety and security when traveling abroad is important. The first step is the Smart Travelers Enrollment Program. That's STEP, S-T-E-P. It's a free service provided by the U.S. government to U.S. citizens who are traveling to or living in a foreign country. By allowing you to enter your information about your upcoming trip abroad, it can assist you if there's a family emergency in the United States or if there's a crisis where and while you're on travel. It also provides Americans living abroad with routine information from the nearest U.S. Embassy or Consulate. Register with STEP so the U.S. government can assist you in case of an emergency. Information and enrollment form for STEP can be found at step.state.gov. The second step is having an international cellular and data plan. That way, you can stay informed, stay connected, and stay safe. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. Well, today we're talking about walking tours, and joining me is healthcare professional, registered nurse, and fellow Travel Culturati, Yolanda Como. How's it going, Yolanda?
It's going great, Javon. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you know the old saying, walk a mile in my shoes? We know that means to put yourself in the other person's place to better understand them. And with that thought in mind, and to experience or get to know the style, culture, and soul of a city, is to do so by taking a walking tour or walking it out on your own. There are so many different types of walking tours and ways of walking a city, and that's what we're exploring today. Yolanda, have you ever been on a walking tour?
I have. I've been on one here in Chicago. I recently went on one about a year ago on a food walking tour in one of the neighborhoods called Albany Park.
Yeah, I've never been to Albany Park.
Yeah, it's like the northwest side of Chicago. And their area is very, very ethnic, particularly Middle Eastern and Asian.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Kareem Barbecue Place and a Middle Eastern restaurant. And we also went to a Pakistani restaurant where they only serve desserts. A lot of baklava. It was very, very good.
Well, that's actually one of the first types of tours on my list today, and that's the culinary tour, because many destinations have their own flavor, and a walking tour is a great way to explore that. New Orleans, for example. I don't know if you've ever been to New Orleans, the French Quarter, it's a great walking tour location. You can focus on food and cocktails because they have a lot of nice little stops that you can make along the way. And, of course, they have some of the other historic sites that are within walking distance from the French Quarter. And New Orleans in that area is a great overall walking city. So many things are within close proximity. So you said you have been to New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, I've been there. Didn't do a walking tour, but I did tour the area and had a really good culinary experience while I was there.
Oh, yeah.
I try to hit all the restaurants that I hear about before leaving, and so I always make a point and try and seek out those restaurants.
Well, it's just one of those great walking cities that everything is so close.
Right.
Definitely the French Quarter has a lot of nice little restaurants like Café Du Monde, of course those
beignets
with powdered sugar everywhere on the floor. You can try different places for the same type of cuisine so that you can do your own comparison.
Okay.
Like bread pudding is a big favorite in New Orleans.
Yes,
so everybody has their own little flavor or their own little way of doing it. The Hurricane, for example, bars and try out the different cocktails.
The Grenade.
They have so many wonderful things. And then, of course, just walking all the way down along the water. Mm. And they usually have some kind of festival or something going on there. Just great things to do while you're in New Orleans.
One restaurant that I wish I would try when last time I was there was Dookie Chase restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I tried a couple times, but I never made it to her restaurant. Yeah. And I know she since reopened and since the hurricane.
And you said that you took a walking tour here in Chicago, and Chicago was another one on my list. Chicago is another great city for walking tours. That what I love about Chicago and its food tours is that there are so many different neighborhoods, like the one you were talking about, but you can go to Little Italy,
anywhere.
You can do Chinatown, you can be specific on the type of food that you want. You can even do a Chicago-style cuisine walking tour. So, of course, Chicago has great pizza. Chicago has great hot dogs or sausages. So if you want to focus just on Chicago-style cuisine, you can do just pizza to see which place has the best pizza. Of course, Chicago, the home of the deep dish.
What's your favorite?
Pizza, deep dish pizza?
In Chicago, that is. Not New York.
Well, see, you got me on that one because I
know
prefer New York-style pizza.
I know. That's why I said that.
I like to go to Little Italy, and I like to have hand-tossed pizza.
Here in Chicago?
Here in Chicago. Okay. And I don't think you can go wrong with many of the places in Little Italy. Usually, like those places that are fast food, not your glamorous restaurants. Of course, they have some fantastic Italian restaurants.
Right.
Another place is Singapore. Actually, Singapore, Japan, Melbourne, and Toronto all have great food markets that you can visit. And you can walk through a market and spend hours there. In Singapore, there's the Bukit Timah Market and Food Center. What's great about that is that it is a market, but it's also a place where they serve food. So you can buy some of the local cuisine, but you can also pull up a chair and table and experience some of it too. The same thing in Japan, the Tsukiji Fish Market is
phenomenal. Yeah, I saw your pictures.
Yeah, that place is phenomenal, and you get to see fresh fish that's flown in. And that one is, I think it's the largest one in the world, and maybe even the oldest one in the world. They're actually refurbishing it because they need to expand it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is great to see. And if you want to get up very, very early, they have limited number of spaces where you can go in and witness the tuna auction. That's big.
Wow.
That's a big deal there.
Mm.
And in Melbourne, they have the Queen Victoria Market. And in Toronto, they have the St. Lawrence Market, which is modeled a lot after the Queen Victoria Market. And again, this just places that you can go. Locals go to shop. You can also do tasting tours through there with your walking tour. You can buy a ticket. That way you can go through and taste at different places.
Okay.
Phenomenal. So culinary tours are great ways to really get that full flavor of a city and taste a lot of that local cuisine, because you're going to find a lot of those local favorites at food markets and through a walking tour. Then you have the architectural tours, and Chicago is another one that's known for its architecture.
And I have to say that I'm guilty of not doing any of them, and I've been born and raised in Chicago. But I sort of do things on my own. Not officially or have a professional take me around. I kind of do things on my own.
Well, yeah, and that's something that we're going to talk about too, because you have that choice of doing it, and Chicago is just one of these places where architecture is such a part of Chicago when you're talking about the metropolis that Chicago is.
Right.
And I've done the architectural tour by boat, by going along the river, which is phenomenal. But I've also done the walking one, and they have one that you can sign up for that's actually free.
Oh.
And you go to the Cultural Affairs Exchange down on Randolph,
you
can sign up for them. They're free. The tour guides volunteer their time. And I went on one, and they walk you through these buildings and
the tunnels.
I've been here all this time, and I've never really paid attention to some of these buildings and about the architecture of it, these historic buildings. And another place that you can do great architectural tours is in Italy. Okay. Whether you're in Rome or in Florence, it's a great place. And they have a lot of places that you can see. For example, in Rome, going to the Trevi Fountain or doing the Spanish Steps or Bernini's Fountain, all of that in that area. And then, of course, along the way, you can stop at some great gelato places. Mm-hmm. And you can stop and get some pizza and do some shopping. They have some fantastic stores to look into for some high fashion. And like you were saying, you can walk your own way. You can do it on the great thing about walking tours is that you can do a guided tour with a group. Right. That's a walking tour. You can do a self-guided walking tour where you may go to a tourist tour and pick up headsets.
Right.
Or even some tour companies, local tour companies, may do that. You can pick up the headsets and the audio, and it will walk you through, but mm-hmm. you're doing it all on your own. So you can stop and start it wherever you want, or they give you a map, and they'll map out your route.
Right, that's what I was going to say. I've done it that way, where I had a map, mm-hmm. and I went on my own and just found little areas from the map and to have little information on the map about that particular area.
Yeah, or you just completely do it on your own, or without a map. You know, sometimes you may just want to go to a neighborhood and say, what does this have to offer? So I'm just going to walk around and do some discovering on my own.
Mm-hmm.
That's the great part of a walking tour, is that you have so many different options. And then the last one is really just about that adventurous, the great outdoors. Of course, for those people who are physically fit, they may want to do some longer walking tours. They have walking tours where you're going to be walking for a week. And, of course, at night you stop, and whether you're going to camp out, whether you're going to stay at a B&B or a small boutique hotel. Of course, they have people that will take your luggage from point A to point B. But when you get up in the morning, you're out and you're walking to your next destination. They have a lot of those in the Tuscany region in Italy. And another unique one, if you're a little bit more adventurous, is a walking safari. I don't know if you ever got a chance to do that when you were in Africa.
No, not walking.
Yes. I did one time.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was, what's great about it is that you're nervous about it because you're like, I'm out here walking.
Yeah.
in the bush.
Right.
But you have a guide with you, obviously. You have mm-hmm. to. And they are armed. So in the event you run into anything, and they give you some signals and things. So they tell you about these things, and then, of course, you know, you want to dress properly and all of that. But it's a lot of fun. So
wow.
A lot of fun to do
out
that.
Out in the wild walking.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some tips about taking walking tours, because you obviously have to prepare yourself, making sure that if you're signing up for a guided walking tour, that you have the right questions that you want to ask. Ask about the level of activity or degree of difficulty, if there are going to be stairs and hills, how much distance and time it's going to take you. There are some short ones that you can do for just a couple of hours, and there are longer ones. How many people are going to be in the group? Are you physically active? And I always say, don't wait. That is not the time to say, I'm going to walk. If you don't walk at home, if you're not prepared. So don't overestimate your abilities.
Right, right.
Because you don't want to be that person that's holding up the entire group. And if you're doing it on your own, make sure you check your route beforehand. Create your own stops so you can have time to do what you want and to see it all. Also check the local blogs beforehand so that you can get inspiration and places to check out, especially if you're doing something like a culinary tour. And prepare for emergencies. And that's the thing, that you always want to prepare for emergencies. Now, what would you say would be a part of preparing for emergencies?
Well, for one, if you were a person who had illness such as diabetes,
mm-hmm.
That particular person may, and it's particularly a person who's diabetic and use insulin to manage their diabetes.
Yeah.
So some diabetics do not need to take insulin.
Right. But that number's growing, the number of people
with
diabetes.
Well, yeah, because of the increase of obesity in the country right now.
Yeah.
So you have a vast a large majority of people, individuals, being diagnosed with diabetes type 2.
Right.
And those are the people who require insulin to manage their diabetes mm-hmm. throughout the day. So after you eat each meal of the day, you need to check your blood sugar, or you need to provide some insulin to help bring sugar levels down, blood sugar levels. And in doing so, if you're traveling, there's some precautions you need to take.
Well, what do you need to do before you go, for example, if you are diabetic and you are traveling with insulin?
Well, the number one thing you should do, you should speak with your physician, an endocrinologist, perhaps a nurse practitioner, who are professionals in the areas of diabetes management. When you meet with them 4 to 6 weeks prior to your leaving for your journey, you should take along with you an itinerary that the doctor can see, because he would want to know your schedule of events and activities that you're going to be doing. Also, flight information, because they need to know time zones. All of this affects blood sugar levels, your eating habits, to help you manage and stay on track with blood sugars, because mm-hmm. it can be really detrimental if you don't keep up with it.
Yeah, and if you're going on a long-haul flight, if you're on mm-hmm. a flight for hours, being prepared for that.
Right, if you're on flight for hours, and they're saying if you are going through time zones, particularly many time zones, eastward, going eastward is a little shorter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing it's a little shorter in length, so it would require less insulin. If you're going west, it's going to be a longer route. Therefore, it may require much more insulin for you.
Okay, and I guess with those time zones as well, because if you're going from the United States to Europe, they're already ahead of you, so you have to calculate that so that you don't overdose. And the other way, you don't want to underdose either.
Well, one thing you should be doing, while you're traveling mm-hmm. and flying, you should be checking your blood sugars to see how it's affecting your blood sugars. Because you're going to be snacking on the flight, eating the meals on the flight, and it's different time zones. So, like you said, Europe is way ahead of us. It's probably, 8 or 9 hours ahead
of... depending on where you are and where you're
exactly,
going.
Exactly, or even longer. So now you're no longer 12 hours prior, mm-hmm. but you are eating dinner or breakfast at another time zone.
Right.
So you need to get your body on schedule with those particular time zones,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, make sure your blood sugars are within those levels.
Now, talking about what you need to bring with you, what about managing that, traveling with the medication and storing that medication?
So when you're traveling with your insulin medication, things that you really need to know is how you're going to store it. It's not recommended that you should store it in hotel refrigerators, because temperatures in the refrigerators vary. A lot of times, by varying means that they can freeze your insulin.
Ooh.
And if it does that, then the insulin is no longer any good. Some people put it in the ice bucket
mm-hmm.
on the desk or in the table in the hotel room, and they change the ice water or ice daily. But a lot of people say be careful with that as well, because sometimes the hotel cleaning person throws that out. Insulin is pretty sturdy, and it can be kept at room temperature depending on how long you've had it. So if you're going on a trip shorter than 4 weeks,
mm-hmm.
you can have it at room temperature.
Okay.
And also, when you are traveling with the insulin, it should not be packed in with a check-in. You should have it with you on a carry-on,
mm-hmm.
okay, because...
Well, yeah, you may need it during the flight.
Yeah, you may need it. You never know what's going to happen. You can have layovers.
Mm-hmm.
You can have missed flights. You can have lost baggage. Anything can happen. And
right.
if you don't have those dosages, then you're going to another country. It may be a little difficult trying to get extra or replacements. So you can manage your insulin, your blood sugar levels while you're traveling.
I just like to keep anything, even if it's over-the-counter drugs that I'm taking, with me at all times. I keep it in my carry-on bag. But if you have it, if you're traveling with it, is there a risk of it passing TSA regulations?
Yes. So when you see your physician, you should ask him to write a travel letter. And this letter should include that you are, one, a diabetic, and your condition, what it requires. You have to carry needles with you, mm-hmm. lancets with you, a meter to check your blood sugar.
Those things just confiscated from you.
No.
TSA.
And but the TSA, they are very familiar with diabetic patients,
okay.
People who have diabetes, and so they're very familiar with it. So if they see these items, they will go through them, but they will most likely pass you through with
right.
no true issues.
With your letter and your documentation.
Exactly.
Yeah. So being prepared with any type of traveling that you're doing is key and crucial. But certainly if you're doing walking tours and you're out there and you're diabetic and you're going to need these items, you want to make sure that you bring them with you, and you want to make sure that you're taking the tips that Yolanda has given you today. You know, walking a destination separates, I think, the tourist from the traveler. The tourist visits a destination and a traveler explores. So if you really want a destination to leave that everlasting impression, walk through its neighborhoods, eat at the local restaurant,
yes.
shop at its markets, and follow in the...
Devon Harley here, your travel pro and host of Traveling Culture.
Welcome back to Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley.
Travel to get your body on schedule with those particular time zones,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, make sure your blood sugars are within those levels.
Now, talking about what you need to bring with you, what about managing that, traveling that?
Okay. Do you know how many countries are in Africa?
A meter to check your blood sugar.
Those things just confiscated from you.
No.
TSA.
And but the TSA, they are very familiar with diabetic patients,
okay.
people who have diabetes, and so they're very familiar with it. So if they see these items, they will go through them, but they will most likely pass you through. With
right.
no true issues.
With your letter and your documentation.
Exactly.
Yeah. So being prepared with any type of traveling that you're doing is key and crucial. But certainly if you're doing walking tours and you're out there and you're diabetic and you're going to need these items, you want to make sure that you bring them with you, and you want to make sure that you're taking the tips that Yolanda has given you today. You know, walking a destination separates, I think, the tourist from the traveler. The tourist visits a destination and a traveler explores. So if you really want a destination to leave that everlasting impression, walk through its neighborhoods, eat at the local restaurant,
yes.
shop at its markets, and follow in the locals' footsteps. Make sure you talk to the locals and make acquaintances. Take pictures with them, and don't forget to tag who they are so you won't forget when you get back. Well, Yolanda, thank you so much for joining me
today.
You're
quite welcome.
And
quite
thanks
welcome.
For that wonderful information on traveling with insulin.
Sure.
And once again, folks, you're going to be hearing more from Yolanda. She's a recurring guest with me, and you're going to hear from her at least once a month. Africa is the second largest continent on the planet and the second most populous continent after Asia. While it's not the largest, it has the most countries and takes up about 20% of the world's entire landmass. So our question of the week is to see if people know how many countries comprise Africa. Monica Bobbitt took to the streets of Chicago to see if she could find anyone who knew the answer.
Hi, Nina. Have you ever traveled to Africa?
Yes, I have.
What part?
West Africa.
Okay. Do you know how many countries are in Africa?
I don't know how many countries, but, you know, there's definitely the eastern part, western part, southern part, and northern part of Africa.
Hi, what's your name?
Boaz.
Boaz, have you traveled to Africa?
Yes.
What part?
Ghana, Cape Town.
Okay. Do you know how many countries are in Africa?
52.
What's your name?
Larae Harper.
Larae Harper, have you ever been to Africa?
No, I have not.
Okay. Do you know how many countries are in Africa?
Let me Google that.
Okay. About 50-something. So now you have something to Google. But thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Joshua, have you ever traveled to Africa?
I have not, no.
And do you know how many countries are in Africa?
No.
That's fine. You're not the only one. What's your name?
Nelson.
Nelson, have you been to Africa?
I was born there, yes.
Oh, great. You were born there. What part?
Mozambique, southeast.
Do you know how many countries are in Africa?
If I have to guess, I'll say 35.
You say 35?
Yes.
And you are from Africa?
Indeed. I was raised in London, so maybe that's why.
What's your name, sir?
Deontay.
Deontay, have you ever been to Africa?
I have not.
Do you know how many countries are in Africa?
Do I know how many countries are in Africa? Ooh, 35.
35?
Yes.
Okay, is that your final answer?
That is.
Uh-huh. Thank you so much. Have you traveled to Africa?
Yes.
What's your name?
Umu.
Umu?
Yes.
Is that an African name?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how many countries are in Africa?
I don't know exactly how many countries, but I would say the same thing. I believe there is the west part, the south part, north part, and then the east part.
Okay.
Central Africa as well.
Thank you, ladies, so much for your time. You guys have a good day. Thank you. What's your name?
Natasha Cooper.
Hi, Natasha. Have you ever been to Africa?
No, but I want to go.
Okay. And do you know how many countries are in Africa?
No. I don't. I ain't gonna lie. No. I just know about Africa. That's it.
You just want to go.
I just want to go.
Okay. Thank you so much, Natasha.
Okay.
Back to you, Javon. Well, thank you, Monica. Here you go. There are 54 countries in Africa, and Western Sahara, a member state of the African Union whose statehood is disputed by Morocco. South Sudan is the continent's newest country. It was created on July 9, 2011, after seceding from the Republic of Sudan. The largest country is Algeria, situated in